Go Loud.
If he goes home, people will still say, are you still out in America?
You're still at the music.
Still at the music. No, I mean, Kerry, we just give them employment. So we're just happy to see them doing well.
Big surprise. Aoife supportive of vigilante justice. Hello everybody and welcome to A Few Scoops. My name is Aoife Murr. I am an author and journalist and struggling still with the amount of rain in Dublin. It's always a bad sign when I was in Derry at the weekend and Derry was drier than Dublin. It's very tough.
The land is weeping, this part of the country. I was in Port Magee, that's in West Kerry, and I was struck by the lack of general water falling off mountains.
My co-host there, Colm O'Regan, who hasn't been introduced yet, you came into the studio the day like you were working on the roads, like full high-vis, yellow jacket, yellow trousers, like you were working on the railways.
There's no such thing as bad weather, Aoife. It's just bad clothing. So I was fully kitted out, head to toe, in useful workers' gear as opposed to soft-handed college wet gear. Mm. So it's actually fine.
Our first story is going to be about the newly released Epstein file. So if you're not interested or can't really listen to stuff like that, I totally understand. If you want to skip on for about 10 minutes, that's fine, because some of this is very grim. It will be talking about sexual assault and trafficking, and it won't be for everybody. The disclosure of 3 million more files related to Jeffrey Epstein suggests that other men, well-known men, were involved in the sexual abuse and trafficking of young women and perhaps children. There are questions about the official contention from the US Justice Department that there isn't evidence to investigate these third parties for the potential involvement in Jeffrey Epstein's crimes. So the newly released documents, they're all publicly available. You can go on and there's a American government website link you can just click on. There's 3 million, so it's photographs, videos, voice notes, emails. Some of it is really hard to parse. As a journalist for a number of years, I am quite good at looking at government documents. I'm quite good at working out redacted documents. And even I struggled.
Like, it's probably something you actually need AI to actually process it all, to even give you a start.
I would like to point out at the start, if your name is mentioned in the Epstein files, it does not mean that you have committed a crime. There are some of the FBI's tip line and statements taken from people, but the vast bulk of it is from Jeffrey Epstein's own email address and Ghislaine Maxwell's own email address, in which they talk to Harvard professors, medical doctors, Elon Musk, Prince Andrew, Sarah Ferguson, and the list goes on and on. So the newly released documents contain allegations that Epstein provided victims to other men and possible criminal involvement with Ghislaine Maxwell. One accuser said that Maxwell told her Epstein had to leave his house, but there was a friend staying who she could massage. During this encounter, the associate offered her money if she engaged in sex. And a lot of them goes on like this. Harvey Weinstein has been mentioned repeatedly in the Epstein files. He is currently in jail and denies any wrongdoing. The newly released emails appear to have even worse news for the former Prince Andrew, now known as Andrew Mountbatten. He has told so many lies when it comes to his very clear and intimate relationship with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. In 2019, when he gave that disastrous interview to Newsnight, he tried to claim that he distanced himself from Epstein after his 2008 conviction for sexually abusing a 14-year-old girl. However, the new emails suggest that the pair remained close, and in 2010, Epstein requested private time on a planned visit to London. Prince Andrew replied, "We could have dinner at Buckingham Palace and we would have lots of privacy." 2 days later, he followed up by saying, "Delighted for you to come here to BP, Buckingham Palace. Come with whomever and I'll be free from 4 o'clock." I mean, of course he's free from 4 o'clock. Yeah. He doesn't have a job. Then we have Andrew Mountbatten's ex-wife, Sarah Ferguson, lifelong scrounger of the British taxpayer who still lives in royal property despite being divorced from this weird man for quite some time.
And who had, like, rehabilitated her image because was seen as the normal one.
Because he was a freak.
Yeah. In that relationship. Wrote children's books. I have a children's book
at home. Yes, we've heard so much about this.
Tea with Granny. Granny is the queen.
In a number of emails, Sarah Ferguson appears to ask Jeffrey Epstein for money. She thanked Epstein for being the brother she always wished for.
Sarah, you do not want a brother like that.
And that was in a year after he was convicted of child sexual abuse. Ferguson appears to suggest that she and her daughters, Princess Beatrice and Princess Eugenie, those names are an affliction, not a name, but that's for a different podcast. They met the disgraced financier saying, "I have never been more touched, I'll fucking bet, I have never been more touched by a friend's kindness than your compliment to me in front of my girls." Epstein was under house arrest at the time this email was sent. Not just the royals, more weird landed gentry of Britain were involved in this. Jeffrey Epstein sent money to Lord Mandelson's husband for some reason. The year after his conviction, the email suggests that this was to fund an osteopathic course. I mean, I don't know what rich people get up to. Mandelson asked to stay at one of...
What rich people generally do is have enough money to pay for an osteopathic
course. Yeah, that's true.
It really is an ad for being rich, isn't it? Like, once you get rich enough, people give you more money.
Yeah, well, you get loads for free once you're rich. But anyway, Lord Mandelson asked to stay at one of Jeffrey Epstein's properties while he was serving his jail term. The terms of Jeffrey Epstein's sentence allowed him to work from his office during the day and return to jail each night. Lord Mandelson was sacked as the UK's ambassador to the US last September when it emerged he had sent supportive messages to Epstein after he was convicted. And over the weekend, he resigned from the Labour Party because he said, although he has no memory of this money, no memory of ever sending these emails, he said, "I'm going to resign from the Labour Party." Keir Starmer, and it's rare I ever give Keir Starmer a compliment, has been very strong on this. He believes that Prince Andrew should go to America and testify. And he said that all the women and victims are the people that they should be listening to. And same with Peter Mandelson. He said he's done the right thing. And he just thinks it's basically has been very strong that Mandelson shouldn't be in the Labour Party.
That possible testimony of Andrew in Congress, that sounds like another car crash waiting to happen. I keep picturing Greg from Succession testifying there, just that stuttering, you know, covering up the uncoverupable.
Yeah.
It's going to be awful.
And our favourite guy, noted liar and weird racist, Elon Musk, has now been found that he was so annoying that Jeffrey Epstein didn't even want him to come to his island.
Even the nonces don't want him.
If you can go on the internet and look at Elon Musk's emails to Jeffrey Epstein, it is so embarrassing. He is begging to be invited to these parties. And in the first email, Jeffrey Epstein doesn't even reply. He gets Ghislaine Maxwell to reply because he doesn't want to talk to Elon.
It's so depressing that so much bad happens in the world because of people's need to be in
with the cool guys.
The cool gang. And it's like, and you just feel like saying, you're a billionaire, it's fine.
Yeah.
Make your own gang. Some people might join.
Yeah. So Elon Musk appears to have asked repeatedly, could he come to parties on Little St. James, which is the island that Jeffrey Epstein owned. He said in one, "What day/night will be the wildest party on your island?" In one response, Elon Musk does a kind of, "Do you know who I am? I am making, you know, the most sophisticated rocket ship in the world." And Jeffrey Epstein replies to him and says, basically, "Do you think I'm a fucking idiot?" Jeffrey Epstein, it appears, did not like Elon Musk at all and found him quite weird and annoying. Just to be clear, Elon Musk has always denied having anything to do with Jeffrey Epstein. There are a number of very wealthy people that we wouldn't really know. So the head of the LA Olympics committee was emailing about leather outfits. The New York Giants, which I think is NFL. Yeah. The New York Giants owner, Steve Tisch, was mentioned hundreds of times. And the man himself, Donald Trump, is mentioned, I think these ones, it's 5,300 times. It's worth noting that Donald Trump has not appeared in any of these emails to have directly emailed Jeffrey Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell, but they talk about Trump quite a lot. The photographs and videos of Epstein are pretty horrendous. There are videos of him chasing women young girls around a kitchen. There is a new picture of Prince Andrew leaning over a woman on all fours. The pictures are, they're bizarre.
I've seen the Prince Andrew one, yeah. The thing about, like, Trump is almost the best hope for all the Epsteinians, because even if Trump comes up, you know, if there's a smoking gun for him, given what people have been willing to let slide, if he is implicated more strongly and his fans will let it slide, it's good news for all the other fuckers.
There is also an Irish link to the Epstein files. Queen's University in Belfast is going to remove the name of the former US Senator George Mitchell, who was one of the architects of the Good Friday Agreement, from a peace centre following the emergence that he was closer to Jeffrey Epstein than we previously knew. So George Mitchell, for people who aren't aware, was this young-ish kind of hotshot Democrat senator during the Good Friday Agreement. He was sent by Bill Clinton to come over and form the peace agreement between Sinn Féin, the ceasefire, the IRA, the UUP, and basically the first instances of the Good Friday Agreement. George Mitchell spent a lot of time in Belfast when he had a very young family. He sacrificed a lot and talks a lot about it. Not as much as the people of the North sacrificed, I would say, but he gave it a lot of his time and energy for the Good Friday Agreement and was hailed as, you know, one of the architects along with Bertie Ahern and Tony Blair. But now, we had previously known that George Mitchell did appear on one of the flight manifests on Jeffrey Epstein's plane. However, since the new tranche of emails have been released last week, it appears that George Mitchell is even closer than he formerly said. So his name will be removed from a peace centre and a bust of Mr. Mitchell will be removed from the university grounds in Queen's. A Queen's spokesperson said, Queen's University Belfast has taken the decision to remove the name of its former Chancellor, Senator George Mitchell, from the Institute for Global Peace, Security and Justice, and to remove the bust commemorating him from the university campus. The decision follows the emergence of new information contained in the Epstein files. While no findings of wrongdoing by Senator Mitchell have ever been made, the university has concluded that in light of this and mindful of the experiences of victims, it is no longer appropriate for institutional spaces to continue to bear his name. So George Mitchell said, like many people, like Elon Musk and whoever else, that he had no contact with Jeffrey Epstein following his conviction for sexually abusing a child. However, on Friday, emails released said that attempts were made by Epstein to organise meetings between the two men in 2010 and 2013. The released documents don't confirm if any meeting took place, and a lot of it is redacted, but there was clear communication between George Mitchell and Jeffrey Epstein after he was convicted of being a child predator.
It wasn't just one-sided.
Yeah.
He's still there, George.
A spokesperson said, Senator Mitchell profoundly regrets ever having known Jeffrey Epstein and condemns without reservation the horrific harm Epstein inflicted on so many women. He said that he did not at any time observe, suspect, or have any knowledge of Epstein engaging in illegal or inappropriate contact with underage women. There is no such thing as underage women or children. I hate this kind of language. It does my head in. There, so far, has been no arrests, convictions, or anything. Actually, the only person I think who's suffered any type of consequences so far has been George Mitchell.
Yeah. Soft target.
They're taking my statue away. Anyway, there is now, obviously, a lot more momentum behind investigating and arresting the people involved in the Epstein files. I think because some of them are the richest people on earth and the most powerful people on earth, we might be waiting a while. And it's also worth noting that for years, Republican and right-wing people often said that there was a celebrity or cabal of elites who were raping and trafficking in children, and now there is evidence of such a thing and no one seems to care anymore. So good to see that we've all drawn a line.
Yeah. Now that they're out of power, it's fine.
Two of Colin's favourite artists in Bad Bunny and Kendrick Lamar were the big winners at this year's Grammy Awards in LA, along with people like SZA. Do you know any of these people that I've mentioned?
I know Kendrick Lamar. Bad Bunny singing at the Eurovision at the at the Super Bowl. Is he Spanish? Is because
he's Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Spanish language, because I haven't
Spanish
heard.
Language, yeah. Yeah. So Bad Bunny made history when he won Album of the Year for, oh God, I'm going to butcher this, Tebi Tirar Mas Fotos, which means I should have taken more photos, the first Spanish language album to achieve this honour. And Kendrick Lamar also broke records with 5 wins, including Best Rap Album and Record of the Year, becoming the most awarded rap artist in Grammy history. I will give you 10 euros right now if you can tell me Kendrick Lamar's biggest hit that he sang at the Super Bowl.
At the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I'll even give you more a better clue.
It's Not Like Us, is it?
Oh, well done!
Yeah. Like, do you think I listen to Foster and Allen? I mean, I do.
Because
some of those old ones, Joe Dolan, Terrence Mint, I've been known to get down and boogie Kendrick Lamar. He's still making a few tracks anyway.
He's still kicking a ball. Yeah. So the main thing, I suppose, that you could take away from the Grammys this year, so the Grammys tends to be very long and very boring compared to the other awards ceremonies.
8 hours long, 95 categories. As an awards host, I really feel for them, because once you get beyond 15, the back of the room is gone.
Yeah.
And
a lot of free drink there, I'd imagine, as well.
Even if they have to pay for the drink, when the ceremony goes on long enough, people will pay anything to leave.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know what it's like at the Grammys, but there's a lot of applause for the first one, and then there's a sort of half-life curve of applause. So by the 95th one...
Yeah, by the time you get to like spoken word...
Yeah, so some of the categories...
So...
There's 95 of them. I'm trying to figure the weirdest one. Best choral performance. Any choirs up for that? Best new age ambient or chant album. Best bullshit, I'd say. Best load of shite.
So the main takeaway from this year's Grammys, although they do tend to be quite boring, was that it was very political, if you consider being against kidnapping political. So Bad Bunny got very emotional when he won the top prize. He cried on the stage. He acknowledged his homeland of Puerto Rico and dedicated the win to all the people who had to leave their homeland, their country, to follow their dreams. A lot of artists and pop stars wore a Ice Out badge in protest against what ICE is doing in America. A lot of people who won awards made speeches on the stage against ICE. So Bad Bunny, the big winner, said, "We're not savages, we're not animals, and we're not aliens. We are humans and we are Americans." And then he said, "ICE out." 26-year-old Olivia Dean won the award for Best New Artist, and she said, "I guess I want to say I'm up here as the granddaughter of an immigrant. I'm a product of bravery, and I think those people deserve to be celebrated." Billie Eilish, who won Song of the Year for Wildflower, not a song I think I've ever heard, but she said, "No one is illegal on stolen land." Her and her brother and collaborator Phineas said, "It's just really hard to know what to say and what to do right now. I'm really hopeful in this room, and I feel like we just need to keep fighting and speaking up and protesting, and our voices really do matter, and the people matter." So a very political...
She's an immigrant as well, isn't she? Or some,
her mum and dad are both Irish.
That's right.
Another big winner of the night was Steven Spielberg.
He released a Grime album or something.
He became an EGOT.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So the director received EGOT status after he won a Grammy during the Grammys pre-show on Sunday. He won a Grammy for Best Music Film category for music by John Williams, on which Spielberg is credited as a producer. I think this might be a bit of a stretch, but...
Yeah. It's very much sponsor wins category.
Did you know Barack Obama has a Grammy?
Is this for...
He read his audiobook.
Read his all for God's
sake. Yeah. Me and you still waiting on ours.
Yeah, I've read my audiobook and it was nominated for an Irish Book Award, cruelly robbed, but, you know, I'm not bitter.
No. So that means that Steven Spielberg is now in EGOT. He has 3 Academy Awards, 1 Tony and 4 Emmys.
That's Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony.
Yeah. The Cure, the 80s glam rock band, legends, they won their first Grammy.
Okay.
In the big year of 2026. K-pop won their first. Do you know? You have kids. You know K-pop.
K-pop
Yeah. So the song "Golden" from the surprise Netflix hit movie K-pop Demon Hunters also won a Grammy on Sunday, and they won for Best Award for a Song Written for Visual Media. The banger, which is sung by EJAE, I don't know if that's one word, was nominated for 4 Grammys this weekend.
Sorry, the banger is the name of the song. It's not a good song.
And the song's called Golden.
Oh, right,
I just called it a banger.
You call it the banger. Oh, yeah. Right. Just checking.
Getting more dad every day.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of like a La La Land moment when Queen of the World, best person to ever live, Cher, was supposed to award a Grammy to Kendrick Lamar and SZA for Record of the Year, but she got confused because the name of the song is Luther Vandross, and she accidentally awarded the award to Luther Vandross, who has been dead for a number of years.
I think it's understandable after 8 hours and 95 awards that there might be some arse-ups.
No one seemed to mind because of Cher. And not to be left out, an Irish person won a Grammy this weekend for Best Chamber Music / Small Ensemble Performance. The winner was Alan Pearson and the orchestra Alarm Will Sound. The song is, or the piece of music, sorry, is a reconstruction of Donegha Dennehy's song Land of Winter. So we had a little listen to it before we came on, and it's sort of like the music that's on when Snow White is running through a forest. Very light.
Well, look, classical music. You know, it can't all be given out about Po-Po and fighting the power. Sometimes even activists need to kind of relax a while.
The other Irish one at the Grammys was an LA-based but Kerry man, master and engineer Rory O'Flattery, provided the master and engineering on Kendrick Lamar's song Luther on his GNX album, which won Record of the Year at the awards. So technically, this man has a Grammy. And if you people listen are thinking, what does a man called Rory O'Flattery from Kerry look like? What you are picturing is exactly right.
Yeah.
He is the most Irish looking man I've ever seen.
And if you were wondering what would the mastering engineer on a Kendrick Lamar album look like, that is not the first picture.
No.
I think it's brilliant.
He looks like someone who works on the boats in Skellig. Yeah.
But it's just the classic example of he's won a Grammy, and if he goes home, people will still say, are you still out in America?
Are you still at the music?
Still at the music. He could have an Oscar. It just, fair play, you know, wouldn't be much money in that. And I suppose he couldn't find no work here, so he went away.
It's worth noting that this is Rory O'Flattery's 7th Grammy nomination. Yeah. This fella is just over there, ticking away over in LA.
He's the Meryl Streep of mastering engineers.
And then he comes back to Killarney and people have no idea what he does for a living. I think he's some sort of music teacher, they say.
And it feels like Killarney has won its own EGOT, or Kerry in general, this year, between the acting, the Gaelic football, and
Jesse Buckley alert.
The acting, the Gaelic football, and the Grammy, which would be, instead of EGOT, Gaelic football, Golden Globe, and Grammy. Instead of EGOT, it's a good.
I'm sure the people of Cork are really happy about this and not jealous at all about Kerry's big year.
No, I mean, Kerry, we just give them employment. So we're just happy to see them doing well.
Staying with pop culture, entertainment, and politics, the First Lady of the United States, Melania Trump, has released a new film directed by a man with credible sexual assault allegations who also appeared in the Epstein files. The documentary, backed by Jeff Bezos and Amazon Prime, Melania, has only sold out in 2 theatres in America. One in Florida, which I don't think is very surprising because that's where they live, and one in Missouri. It was estimated that it opened in around 2,000 theatres nationwide, and social media was flooded with screenshots of very poor sales and empty theatres. Apparently there was Craigslist advertisements paying people to go see Melania in Boston.
Republican Congress people were giving away tickets to their staffers and all that kind of thing.
In the UK, one single seat was sold for the 9:40 a.m. showing at Sittingbourne's Light Cinema, according to a Guardian journalist who was the sole attendee. Many theatres across the country had just had a smattering of seats across showtimes. It was my cousin's birthday yesterday. Mm. And someone did send him a ticket for Melania.
Right.
Yeah, but I think he had to go to Belfast if he wanted to see it.
I wonder, will it turn into a cult?
Oh, cult classic, yeah.
People will go see and have like Melania parties. Would you hate watch it?
Oh, I'd hate watch it. Yeah, I definitely would. But then I would want to hate watch it on like a dodgy stream just to ensure that no money goes towards it. So it was projected to bring in about $5 million. So that's kind of similar to documentaries like After Death and Am I Racist? However, I mean, that's quite ironic. Anyway, other estimates for Melania are even lower, with Box Office Pro predicting about 1 to 2 million opening weekend. It was acquired by Amazon MGM, which allegedly spent $75 million on the acquisition and marketing. And the First Lady herself reportedly pocketed $28 million of this.
Am I right in saying that people who've worked in it have asked for their credits to be removed?
Yes. So people who worked on the Melania documentary, in terms of like the background, they've asked just to have it removed because they actually think it will hurt their career going forward. So the Independent in London said it sets the record for the largest ever gap between critic scores and audience ratings.
Chances are, with the crowds that low, you could have a very strong influence.
So, yeah,
the audience rating.
Well, they reckon it's been flooded with Trump supporters who haven't actually seen the film. Sorry, one critic said, Melania spends most of the scenes playing a stage version of herself, and shots of the First Lady are composed with all the deliberateness Ratner brought to his work on X-Men: The Last Stand. This is somewhere between reality TV and pure fiction. It was hyped up as a very private look at the work put in before the inauguration and shows her commitment to children in need. The Irish Times review said, a shameless propaganda film that could put you to sleep.
Is it any good?
The Atlantic, the Melania Trump documentary is a disgrace. The Guardian, Trump film is gilded trash remake of The Zone of Interest.
Oh, God.
The Zone of No Interest, what?
Yeah.
This is The New Yorker, who said, the director, Brett Ratner, cozied up to the Trumps after spending years in exile amid multiple allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault. He has denied all wrongdoing. For his comeback, he has summoned all the artistic ambition of a local realtor who just got a drone. Then it says, Melania starts to feel like an OnlyFans account crossed with that meme of Kim Jong-un visiting factories. Oh dear.
It will have cult status because it's an artistic artifact in its own right.
Yeah, it's like that recent show with Kim Kardashian, All's Fair. So I don't know if it came across your radar, but it was Kim Kardashian and like these really established actresses like Sarah Paulson and Glenn Close, who I think is the greatest actor of all time. And they were in this lawyer style soap kind of thing called All's Fair. And people said, I haven't watched it, people said it is trash, like the worst thing you've ever seen, but people still watched it because they hate watched it. Melania might have the same thing, but then also I feel like the state of America has gone so far now that people actually don't find the humor or irony in these things anymore, because we're basically looking at like a semi-fascist regime and they're like, this just isn't funny anymore.
So there's only two ways this can go. In an optimistic view of the future, we will look back on this as the perfect snapshot of that insane time when America slipped closer to dictatorship, or we will look back on this as the best movie made in 2026.
When we're told what to believe, and what we have to say, it might be the greatest thing we've ever seen. So Trump had to play down the reports of very weak ticket sales for the film because it's his wife. And he said, it's a very tough business in theaters selling movie tickets after COVID. I do think that this will do unbelievable streaming and everything, but theatres are a different world.
You sometimes see a meme of a guy in black and white applauding strongly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's Orson Welles in a film called Citizen Kane.
Mm.
And a strong Citizen Kane bang off this, because in the movie, John Foster Kane has married a showgirl and he's so convinced of her talent that he basically produces for her an entire, is it opera? Or musical, and she can't sing.
Yeah, of course.
And everybody is going to the premiere. The premiere is full. She's awful. And there's absolute silence after she finishes singing. And then it cuts to him and he's just applauding strongly to get everybody to do it. So it has strong vibes of that. I will say it probably still won't be the worst ever of its kind.
No.
In terms of propaganda for terrible organization, if you call the Trump family an organization. Because probably the FIFA movie from 2014, have you heard of this?
No.
Tim Roth was in it. It was...
Tim Roth. Surely he has money. He doesn't need...
Yeah, he played Sepp Blatter, right? Okay. Who was one of the most corrupt football administrators of all time. So Melania had a budget of 70-something million and it'll make 8 million.
Mm.
United Passions was the name of the movie. It was about FIFA, the birth of FIFA. And it was made on a budget of between $25 to $32 million. For its three-day opening, it grossed $918 with no zeros after it.
Oh, God.
The worst opening of all time for a film opening in 10 to 15 theatres in US box office history.
So all the best. If you have seen Melania, God love you, but do get in touch with us. We would like to hear your thoughts. Is there any mentions of Ireland? Do they go to Dunbeg? I don't think they do, because we would have heard about it. Anyway, give us a shout if you've seen it. We would love to hear. Maybe we'll do a review when it comes out on streaming.
What's never, what has she written on her jacket? Do I look like I give a fuck or
no,
what?
I don't really care, do you?
I don't really care, do you?
Okay. And that's exactly how I feel about this film. We have headed to London for this story. An Irish bus driver, Mark Hare, a 62-year-old who was living and working in London as a bus driver, was sacked after a thief who stole a passenger's necklace ran off the bus.
That's a very early 20th century,
isn't it? Old timey. Yeah. Did he sit
behind
her on the bus and like unclasp it?
He has a nickname like the Pimpernel or something.
And then when Mark chased him down, he said that he wanted to go back and apologise to the passenger. When they got up close to the woman, she was quite frightened. In Mark's words, I'm sure the thief would have a different version of the story. In Mark's words, the thief lifted his hand towards the woman and Mark just decked him in the face.
Right. Punch first and ask questions later.
He is originally from Limerick but had been in London for a number of years. He was sacked and has since an employment tribunal held up the bus people's decision to keep him sacked. But he said the public support since has been incredible and more than 100,000 people have signed a petition to get him back into his job. He said he doesn't want the job back, but he does want an apology. He said, I'd like them to compensate me for lost earnings. That's very important. And they understand that they got it wrong. And that's important for me. Asked if he wanted his job back, he said, absolutely not. You cannot work for a company that treats its staff like that. I'm not saying they always treat the drivers bad. I'm just saying if anything does happen, it's always the driver's fault and they come down on you heavy. You're on your own. You've created a situation. Now you get out of it. There's no help. He said driving a bus is an underpaid and tough job, but he said the support he's received online has been incredible. He said he was justified in his actions, and it seems that 99% of people agree with me. Like, okay, I totally get this, right? That this is sort of reform bait, and that like, oh, you can't do anything anymore. Yeah. You can't even punch someone at work. So from one side of it, I'm like, yeah. Fair enough. The fella stole a necklace and
no matter who you are in, like, no matter how much you want, we need restorative justice and we need to understand people. Everybody, I think, has it in them to want to punch a thief
if
they are connected to it. So this is one of the most satisfying stories, the idea that a thief got punched, including the amazing quote, I ended up in ICU, this is the bus driver, Mr. Hare. I had two operations on my hand because of the infection. So he got an infection on his hand from the tooth of the guy he punched. I was very, very close to losing my hand. I quote the surgeon who said probably in the next 3 days I would lose my hand if I didn't get it seen to at the time. So you're like, yes, the bit of me that hates all this fucking people.
Scabby.
You know, just general meh lawlessness.
Yeah.
Just want to punch thieves.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And he did say that the woman whose necklace was stolen was quite frightened. He put himself between the thief and the woman. And when the thief lifted his hand, that's when he punched him in the face. Naturally, as we said, this has become rage bait for some of the worst people on earth. The Conservative Party have backed Mark. Former Prime Minister and Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, said the sacking of a hero bus driver for knocking out a necklace thief says it all about the wet, woke, legalistic pettifoggers who run Starmer's Britain. So that is a man who denies the amount of children he has and has lost his job as a journalist for being a liar.
And whose handling of COVID probably killed far more people than any necklace thieves.
But it is the woke legalistic pettifoggers.
I wish this guy very well. I hope he gets a good wad of cash from the GoFundMe. I would just counsel him.
20 grand so far.
Yeah, I would just ask him to get somebody's advice before, because he'll get a ton of invitations to appear on.
Probably. News.
Yeah, I'd say reform will get him to appear on a podium. 100%. For a tough on Law and Order kind of thing. They're just asking, just if you believe that, go for it. But there'll be people who just want to take advantage of you and your trusty right hook. I mean, there's a place for it.
I mean,
instant justice.
The kind of way I look at it, right? And I always kind of feel the same with stuff like this, is like in terms of the thief himself, like you play with fellas, you get your arse tickled. Do you know what I mean? You went out and committed a relatively violent attack on somebody. You got punched in the face.
And coming from
that's not a bad run, to be honest.
And coming from a city where there was quite a comprehensive parallel law enforcement program.
Oh, big surprise. Aoife supportive of vigilante justice. No, but I do think, like, I would like all violence to be removed from society, but I don't think that is.
But let's not start
realistic.
With pumping necklaces. We'll start with the big ones, and then we can
put it this way: if it was somebody who robbed me on a bus and I was afraid, and the bus driver punched him, I would be pretty happy and thankful for the bus driver.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So shout out Limerick, your reputation remains unsullied when it comes to vigilante justice.
Yeah, representing. So my good news this week is a shout out to the people who organise festivals in the winter, right? The toughest time. So I've just come from Port McGee Comedy Festival. Port McGee is in America, basically. It's that far west. It's on the end of the... It's one of the last stops before Skellig. So they had a comedy festival at the weekend. And then Ballincollig had a winter festival, Ballincollig in Cork, all last week. And also there was First Fortnight, which is the first couple of weeks of January. So my optimistic thing is that people who, rather than moan about the length of January, just go, you know what, January gives us plenty of days to have events on in, light a candle rather than curse the darkness. I feel for them because the people who put festivals on in January are worried about ticket sales during the Christmas break when everybody else is like, oh, we'll worry about that next year. Yeah. So I just wanted to do a shout out because often what it is, it's somebody going, I'm fucking sick of the dark and I'm sick of nothing being on. And just because the weather's shit, it's not a reason not to have something on. So the three festivals I've had dealings with in January, First Fortnight, Winter Festival in Ballincollig, and the first ever Port McGee Comedy Festival. Well done to everybody who has a go at making a thing happen in January.
Gorgeous. I also have a good news here, and it is that a derelict hotel on the Aran Islands is to reopen as a cultural centre celebrating the arts, heritage and the Irish language. So it's a 10-bed building on Inishman, and it's being refurbished and is scheduled to reopen in 2027. The project is led by harpist Una Ní Flanagan, who said it will celebrate island life. She said Inishman is a cultural jewel untouched by time, and at the first stage of the project, they are inviting members of the public to participate in a competition to name the centre in the spirit of culture and community. They're interested in names referencing cultural connection, education, heritage, environment, and Inishman's unique identity. The winner of the competition will... I see what they've done here. The winner of the competition will receive a 1,000 euro voucher for use at the cultural centre when it opens. So you can enter that online if you just Google the Inishman Cultural Centre. Inishman is a Gaeltacht community with a population of about 200 people. And I love to see it. The Aran Islands is obviously going through a bit of a boom when it comes to...
Yeah.
I think they've done well on TikTok, the Aran Islands.
Yeah,
they have put a boom in tourism.
You still have to get, like, they still have to put bums on seats. So this is a big leap of faith. Well done.
Well done to them. If anyone has been...
I presume McCultureface is not one of the options. You know, whenever there's a naming competition, was it Bodie McBoatface?
Bodie McBoatface,
was the name for a warship?
It's like, you know those wee street cleaners in Dublin, the wee vans that go around with this? But I think one of them's called Dust in the Streets.
The famous one of this genre was the Scottish Gritter Fleet, which had names like Taylor Drift, Snowasis, Keanu Freeze, Skatebush, Irvin Squelch, Albert Einstein,
Irvin Squelch,
Jack Jarvis, Victor McSprayed, Britney Spears, Sir David Attenborough, Snowy Tribbiani from Friends. Strong competition there for Inishman Cultural Centre.
I'm trying to think. Inishman Culture.
It's a man's world.
I was going to say Inishman. Oh, I can't think of anything.
Billy Inish.
Oh, that's good. Billy Inish. That is us this week from A Few Scoops. Please get in touch with your good news. We'd love to hear it. Have you been to Inishman? Do you have any suggestions that you'd like to share with us for the name of the cultural centre? Get in touch. And do please get in touch with any good news that you have. This week's Chaser episode is about the wonderful, great person and great actress, Catherine O'Hara. So that will be out later this week. Thank you.